Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc. All rights reserved.
You're listening to a man whose work is never done.
In a job like yours, even when it's finished, there's always one more thing to do.
And his job is to make your job easier.
It's a very difficult job, and the only way to get through it is we all work together as a team. And that means you do everything I say.
He's Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate.
Welcome back. It's 34 after the hour. Thank you very much for hanging around with us today. Thank you for staying with us. If you just tuned in, welcome aboard. If you've been listening already, thank you for that especially. My website is www.smallbusinessadvocate.com. Don't forget to subscribe to my free newsletter when you get there. And don't forget all the other things, including the blog, which we update every weekday. And get you the blog, between the blog Monday through Friday and the newsletter on Sunday, to get you ready for the week ahead. We got a lot of ways to reach out and touch you if you'd like for us to do that. Or you can just come and get all of that at smallbusinessadvocate.com, including past interviews that I've conducted with Sean Doyle, our good friend, principal of Fitzmartin Marketing, and as I say, a longtime member of our Brain Trust. Sean, welcome back to the show.
Thank you, Jim. Good morning.
It's good to have you back. You want to talk today about, now you typically are here to talk to us about marketing, but today you've got something else on your mind, don't you?
It's ethics. I want to talk about ethics, but there's an important internal marketing communications piece that we'll conclude with. There's an interesting commonality when you look at, it's a huge list of line. I've got the Washington Post in front of me.
Mm-hmm.
I'm looking here at MCI, Tyco, Enron, Adelphia, Merrill Lynch,
WorldCom,
Walmart, Bearing Point. This is a huge list of people where things have gone awry.
Right.
Ethics have fallen apart, gone
right
to the side. And we look at these, as business owners, we look at these headlines and go, you know, those are just the monsters. Those are the big guys. But if we look a little deeper at Enron, for example, what we see pretty quickly is there's a list of banks that follow them. Merrill Lynch and Citigroup and J.P. Morgan each have paid $300 million to settle claims. And there's another list of Barclays.
In their alleged complicity with those companies.
There's at least six banks that were tied in. Well, by the time you boil that down then, we're looking at commercial loan officers and VPs. So we're down the chain. We see the perp walk, and we see the CEOs going to jail. But what we haven't seen a lot of conversation is it's everyday employees who have made the decisions at the banks to support the Enron distrust and dishonesties. So that boils down to us. And as business owners and leaders in our businesses, how do we implement ethics? Ethics has got to be an important part of our daily business walk.
It's been an interesting thing for me to observe in my long career in the marketplace. I've grown up around people who were unethical, and I assumed when I was wet behind the ears back, you know, in my 20s, when I would see these people who would behave as they did, and they basically lied to customers, they basically didn't do business, you know, didn't do business ethically at all. And I mean, they would lie to you to your face, some
absolutely
of them.
Absolutely.
And I used to think, well, they won't last long. But you know what? For some reason, Sean, and I've never understood this, somehow they managed to stay in business. How can you explain that to me?
I could, I guess, with a touch of theology, in that God just allows certain people to be blessed with money, even though we don't understand why.
Well, literally, I knew a guy one time who was such a liar, his customers wouldn't let him come in their store, so he had to hire a salesperson, but they continued to do business with him knowing he was a liar.
But they wouldn't
let him come in their stores.
There's a proverb that says a faithful man will abound with blessings, but he who makes haste to get rich will not go unpunished. So someday there's going to be punishment.
Well, but the thing is that when you're trying to compete with these guys, that you know that's cold comfort. But you're right. But the thing is I will tell you this though, there is something that comes back to you in time, sooner than the, you know, than judgment. And that is this. This is what has happened to me before. I've had customers to call me up and say, I have a competitive proposal that looks pretty good that would cost you this business. Will you come help me evaluate it?
Mm-hmm.
Now, when your customers trust you to that level, you have to earn that kind of trust.
Absolutely. I'm glad you're talking about the customers, because really where it impacts the listeners, your listeners today, Jim, is the customer level. Mm-hmm. I read a recent study from Data Monitor, and they've reported that 86% of customers have become distrustful of corporations. So when we come back, let's talk about how to fix that.
Absolutely. I agree with you. Well, we need to first say, could that possibly be our company that they don't trust?
Absolutely.
And it might be. Even though we think that you know, we haven't done anything wrong, your customer still might not trust you. 20 Till, we'll be right back with Sean Doyle. I'm Jim Blassingame. Stay with me. Welcome back. It's 17 Till. I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate, and we're rocking and rolling with our good friend Sean Doyle, principal of Fitzmartin Marketing out of beautiful downtown Birmingham, Alabama. Give us your website, Sean.
Every day is sunny in Birmingham. We're at fitzmartin.com, FITZMARTIN.com.
But Sean, you were telling us before we went to the break about some research showed 60-something percent of customers, is this the average person, or are these businesses who do business? Who were the people who were polled who said they didn't trust companies?
This is a study of the average person on the street. And things like this can be a little skewed. People vote more often with their money, and that,
right.
And that draws me to another. We're working on a project right now for a company that has 39,000 sales representatives in the country. And in a study of their customers after they've purchased, just a little over half said they trusted the salespeople. Just a little over half said they trusted the organization behind it.
Did the other people say they didn't trust the salespeople?
Yes, absolutely. So they've come to us, and what we're working on with them is how do we help them change that? They don't want to act unethically. And in some cases, people don't even act unethically. It looks like a good business deal or maybe a way to shorten yourself to the sales cycle.
But may it be that you didn't do anything wrong? It may just be that you're getting your collateral damage with all the other stuff that you talked about earlier. Which brings me to the point before you go further, Sean. This brings me to the point. Those of you who are listening who are saying, oh, well, my customers trust me because we're honest. Well, let me tell you what, folks. It may have nothing to do with how honest you are. It may be the way, the perception that they have of the marketplace in general.
Absolutely. Probably not all baseball players take steroids.
And not all used car salesmen are crooks. Right. as my brother will quickly point out. But go ahead now.
Well, there's two steps within your own organizations to take to avoid these problems, or two things that you can do to help avoid them. One of the first rules of trust is you never talk about trust. Do you trust somebody who walks up to you and says, Jim, trust me?
Yeah, you can trust me. Yeah, it always makes me nervous when people say, trust me.
When someone says, trust me, I grab my wallet and make sure it's still there. The first tactic in this effort is to not talk about trust, but first show your employees the connection between ethical behavior and personal benefit. It's just too vague. Sometimes people don't understand how ethical behavior does equal ultimately personal benefit. So connecting, when you communicate to your employees, connect for them how that behavior equals ultimately personal benefit and corporate benefit. And that's a challenge and a connection. Sometimes it's not made. A lot of companies have codes of ethics or written standards of behavior, but they just sort of seem like these obtuse ideas. So the first step is talking about how does that connect to behavior and benefit.
You know what Albert Camus said, don't you? The Nobel laureate, the French Nobel laureate said.
I should.
Said integrity has no need of rules.
Very good.
It's good, isn't it?
It is very good.
And our friend Lynn Morella, who's one of our ethics experts, says that that ethical behavior is devotion to the unenforceable.
Well,
so I guess what I'm getting at is that you know, yes, it's important sometimes to have these things written down, but basically, how the boss behaves, how the boss, you know, if the owner of the company goes around talking about is how important it is for us to be ethical, and then in a meeting when we have an opportunity to slide something under the table or get one over on a customer, which would be an unethical thing to do, we allow that to happen instead of saying to our employees, you know what, we're an ethical company, we're not going to do that. Employees see that, and now they say, absolutely, you know what, we're not as ethical as we say we are.
Absolutely. Well, integrity certainly it speaks louder, or actions speak louder than words. Mm-hmm. So you've got to be serious. If you're not interested in being an ethical company, then don't play around with it. Just go on your way and hope for the best, and maybe you'll end up meeting some of the Enron world.
Well, for some people, it works, unfortunately.
Well, there's a second thing that's interesting in this. We've danced around some Christian comments and some value comments based on some people might call it religion. And that's a scary thing in business because of our legal system and the idea of religion and business coming together is just scary for a lot of folks, even that perception. But the golden rule is interesting in that
which is not necessarily a Christian.
It's not. Every single religion in the world has something that is based on a golden rule. The golden rule is across all belief systems.
Mm-hmm.
So that is a safe thing. If you want to teach a golden rule, the idea that if you want to treat people the way you want to be treated, then that is a safe bet. You can't get in trouble for, well, that's just a Christian thing and we're another religion, so you're insulting me. Well, every single religion has a golden rule built into it. It is obviously from a Christian belief system originally, but it is
unfortunately, in the marketplace today, it seems that there's another golden rule.
There is another golden rule.
And that's he who has the gold makes the rules.
Makes the rules, absolutely.
And that's a reality on some levels, isn't it?
Well, and in this case, you could argue that if you're teaching employees a system of ethics, then you're the one who has the gold. So you do make the rules.
Or the customers.
Ultimately, the customers.
Make the rules. Because they have the goals. Hold on to that thought, Sean. We're going to take a quick break. We're going to be right back with our good friend, Sean Dollar. We're going to talk some more about ethical behavior in the marketplace. Stay with us. I'm Jim Blasingame. Welcome back. It's 7 till. I'm Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate. We're having a good visit with our good friend Sean Doyle, principal of Fitzmartin Marketing. Tell us the website again there, Sean.
We're at Fitzmartin, FitzMartin.com.
FitzMartin.com. All right. So check us out. Now tell us what you do for your customers.
We are a business-to-business marketing communications firm, and we help people primarily with their sales forces. We're different from an advertising agency in that we're much more aligned with sales and understand sales in a business-to-business setting, which is longer than a consumer setting, a sales cycle. And we break down the sales cycle based on behavioral science and then help companies work through each of those stages and make sure they have the proper communications for each and then help them build those communication tools if they don't have them.
How do we find out if our customers trust us?
Well, you can't really ask them directly. What we recommend doing is hiring a third party. Of course, if you ask your customer directly, do you trust me, they're going to say yes. They're obligated
right.
by courtesy to say yes. So we always recommend hiring a third party, and it doesn't have to be fancy professional help. It can be a friend of yours from the country club or from church or wherever, another business. Maybe you could swap. You could call your friend's business, and they could call yours. Call your customers and simply ask a few questions. You can ask somebody 5 or 6 questions and learn an immense amount. Even if you only talk to 10 or 12 people, you'll learn an immense amount.
What about this, though, Sean? What would be wrong with sending your customers a form that they wouldn't have to sign? They could mail back in an envelope of their choosing, and you know, with no return address. And you would say things. And you said something like, you know, in the current environment that we find ourselves in, the research has shown that 63% of consumers don't trust corporations. This concerns us. We want to be an ethical company. We try to behave ethically, but we know that perception is more than reality sometimes. And so when you deal with our company, can you answer these questions? Do our salespeople, A, you know, do they seem ethical to be somewhat ethical, see, whatever, you know. In other words, going down the line, in other words, you set it up with the research that you just gave us and ask them to send that in anonymously. What do you think?
I think that's brilliant. The differences would be only of efficacy with direct mail and some kind of form. You probably would get about 2% response.
Yeah.
With electronic or email communications, you might get it up to around 5 to 10%.
Right. But that wouldn't be anonymous.
No.
Unless you had a website set up.
Exactly, and that's what you do. They come back to a website and fill out a form on the site where it's anonymous.
Right.
But in theory, people think you could still track their email. But ultimately, a telephone is the best way to get not only some quantitative data, but also some qualitative data.
And then just say, you know, would you help us?
Sure,
we believe we're behaving ethically. We don't want to be tarred and feathered by the association with some of the malfeasance that's going on, but we might be. And then maybe the last thing you would say is, if you were us, what would you recommend that we do?
And ultimately, if you're going to ask a customer, you better be ready to listen.
Right.
You've got to be really ready to listen.
Don't ask for a question if you aren't prepared to deal with the answer.
When you get that input in from the customer, then you've got to go to your employees. It comes back to that internal communications to teach any kind of ethical behavior, any kind of standard of behavior that you're trying to teach. And your employees have to know what that mission is. Secondly, they have to be willing to help. They can't be uncooperative. Then they can't be cynical. They have to believe that what you're saying is true. And that's the third gateway of getting through. You've got to help them understand that it will happen. And then finally, you've got to teach them how to use daily tasks to accomplish those goals. Help them visualize what that means when that customer said, you know, I thought they were a little dishonest with the negotiation, or I thought they were dishonest in trying to help me set up a second company to hide a debt. And show them how, in practical terms, in practical behaviors, how that could their behavior affects the overall goal the company has to be a company with integrity.
But they've got to believe that your behavior will supports their behavior.
They've got to know it. They've got to be willing to help. And if your second law, they will not be willing to help if you're disingenuous and doing dishonest deals while you're telling them to make it happen.
Absolutely. Give us the website again, Sean.
FitzMartin.com.
Thank you for being here. Good job today, as always.
Thank you. Enjoy talking.
Sean Doyle, ladies and gentlemen. He'll be back. Got to go for this hour. Before I do, I want to thank my heroes, small business owners, each and every one. This is Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate, and I'll see you tomorrow.
Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blassingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., intended for the private use of our audience. Except as otherwise provided by copyright law, all other copying, redistribution, or publication without prior written consent is prohibited. All rights reserved.